Okay, good morning, everybody. I think we have the last breakout session, which is on impairment testing of goodwill. After that, I think we will finalize this joint meeting, and the GPF has set one session until lunchtime. But before we're doing that, let's start, as I said, with impairment testing of goodwill, and I give the floor to Rakawa.
Good morning, everybody. And I think agenda paper 5A is fairly clear, so I don't really have to do a very big job of teeing up the whole paper, but I'll just briefly go through, tee up the paper once. Now, page 4 of agenda paper 5A sets out the objectives of the research project relevant for today's discussion. So one which is to improve the quality of information provided to users without imposing costs on preparers. And secondly, it's simplifying and improving the application of impairment without loss of information to investors. Now, with these two objectives as the background, we're discussing two possible approaches.
Your PIN confirmed. Please wait, and we'll connect you to your conference.
The additional disclosures about acquired businesses. Now, page 13 briefly highlights the additional disclosures that we are thinking about. Now, these have been developed based on views from CMAQ in the past, and we've also updated our thought process based on comments from GPF. Like, as you're aware, we've had one CMAQ discussion on goodwill and impairment and two GPF discussions in the past on goodwill and impairment. So these have been basically developed based on CMAQ members. It was updated for the views of GPF members. Now, the questions we have on the additional disclosures are set out on page 15 of the agenda paper. In the breakout sessions, what we actually are thinking of achieving out of the discussion is basically for the CMAQ members to explain what disclosures investors want, and also to explain why investors need that information, and the GPF members to probably explain whether they can provide those disclosures or not. If they think they cannot, what are the reasons they cannot provide those disclosures? And are there any alternative disclosures that preparers can provide to meet the information needs of investors? So in the breakout sessions, we would really like that kind of a discussion to take place so that we can get some sense of what the investors want, what the preparers can give. If they cannot, what else can give? Now, the second part of today's discussion is the indicator-only approach to goodwill impairment testing. So as you're aware, currently IAS 36 requires a quantitative impairment test to be carried out annually or more frequently if there are indicators of impairment. And one of the pieces of feedback we've got from the post-implementation review of IFRS 3 is, can we reduce the cost by allowing an impairment test to be done only when there are indicators of impairment rather than doing it annually? So we set out our thoughts on basically pages 17 and 18, and on page 19 we've also set out what we think would be the consequences of introducing an indicator-only approach to impairment testing. And the questions on that part are set out on page 21, which I think are fairly clear. So that's about it from my side. Do you have any comments before we move on to the breakout sessions? Or?
Shiro has a question.
Thank you very much for the explanation and presentation. Before we go into the discussion on the impairment-only approach or disclosure issue, I'd like to remind you here that the current Japanese prepared situation and currently according to the Japanese Business Federation survey, 90% of the respondents from the preparers supports the amortization plus impairment approach is supported. And we take 2 points of discussion in Japanese preparers. First one is Goodwill is, of course, sometimes generated in the synergies as a result of the combination of two different business areas. But however, in other cases, it is also recognized when two companies in the similar or same business area are combined. And in such cases, value of synergy often requires continuous capital expenditures to follow in order to keep the benefit of the synergy. So we consider, or Japanese preparers consider, that such a situation indicates that goodwill is constantly being devaluated. That means it should be amortized. Actually, our company, Nissan Motor, acquired recently one-third of the Mitsubishi Motors, other Japanese auto manufacturer, but at the initial stage, it is very, very critical to allocate a lot of resources, management resources, or R&D resources, or human resources, to make alliance successful with Mitsubishi Motors. That is one point. And secondly, in the purchase transaction, in the process of the purchase price setting, acquisition price is so much dependent on the negotiation or competition among other buyers, and or timing or economic situation changes, etc. So if impairment only approach is applied, we think there is a possibility that such a price condition difference, including the company's negotiation power, is not necessarily reflected in the company's performance results unless impairment is recognized. And so we consider that the company's performance results would be better presented by regular amortization. And we believe that would contribute to the steadiness as well as healthy discipline in the corporate management. And they are the two points that we'd like to mention.
Okay, Zenshiro, I think when the board has not finally discussed if we would go to amortization or stick to impairment only, and I think that's not the topic for today. Today we discuss disclosure and we looking okay to make it more efficient, but we will discuss, I think, in future meeting, do we have any measures to make the impairment test more effective? And if this will not be, I think, achieved, then maybe we have to discuss again, okay, is amortization maybe an alternative? But I think, thank you for that, but it's not the topic
what
we want to discuss today.
I'd just like to add one point to that. I mean, I fully agree with Martin that today it's, the focus is not whether amortization is an alternative way of achieving the effectiveness or not. I mean, I'm not sure where she is around. Yeah, she's there. Because we recently had an investor workshop in Japan after the trustees meeting, and one of the feedback from many investors at that meeting was that they didn't like amortization because they didn't think that it provides useful information to them. So they were quite supportive of having an impairment-only approach to goodwill impairment, but their focus was more on what disclosures can companies give over and above what is currently being already provided. So, I mean, I just wanted to tell that to you as well so that you're aware of the investor feedback in Japan from the workshop.
Okay, Mariette.
Yes, I mean, as a pure user, for me, the whole concept of goodwill measurement and amortization and impairment testing is actually a lot of times quite murky. So I was just wondering if we could just take a few minutes to maybe walk us through some of the key steps actually involved in goodwill measurement and impairment testing, and also just to make sure that we're all more or less philosophically aligned as to what we're trying to achieve here, because personally, I can't really see how you can actually separate the discussion of amortization versus impairment from what we're trying to achieve here. So if I understand this correctly, normally goodwill is basically the amount of the purchase price that for the life of you can't actually allocate to any asset, however intangible. And so basically this is effectively the synergies you're looking to achieve and the portion of the synergies that you're willing to give to the other guys shareholders to get the deal done. So that's, I mean, the first thing, if that's incorrect, then...
It's just there's recognition rules like workforce in place that can be identified but won't be allowed to be capitalized under accounting rules. So there's those items, too, instead of pure synergy. So that's part of goodwill. It just can't be allocated under the accounting rules. Does that make sense?
And being a cynic, there's also CEO ego.
Okay, but I mean, at the end of the day, and
the problem is that if you look at the post-acquisition, a lot of that fair value actually is that exactly.
Mm-hmm. So,
there's a lot of research on that.
But ultimately, I mean, this does tie into synergies because, I mean, that workforce, I mean, you never capitalize workforce. I mean, you just think that, let's say, because you have distribution infrastructure in a country where the target is not active, you're going to be able to, you know, create revenue synergies in that country.
No, I think they have value in and of themselves, the workforce that you're acquiring. That's one of the major reasons that you're doing business acquisitions.
And so
I think that is more than a synergy.
Additional things.
Even in
new customers. So you look at your customer relationships, it's existing customers, it's new customers, new technology that's in pipeline. So there's lots of different
things.
But to be fair, these are all things that we were not able to identify when you do a fair value of all the assets. Yeah. These were things that you weren't able to this is what's left over between we've identified all these assets. Admittedly, some you may not be able to put on the book, but you've identified all these assets, and this is the difference. And so, you know, the cynics in the user community, you know, think, you know, in a lot of ways, this is a premium that has been paid because you think you're going to be able to generate synergies down the road.
No, it's just the one thing is, and you said it, is that there are items that can be identified that don't reach the recognition threshold to be recognized in the financial statement. So there's really three items. There's identifiable items that you can capitalize under the accounting rules.
Okay.
There is identifiable items that, because of the recognition rules or other things, you cannot capitalize due to accounting rules. And then the third is the residual, which people say is synergy or CEO ego, whatever it is. It's a mathematical residual. But there are three items in my construct.
You can have zero synergies and still a huge amount of goodwill. Zero.
But then it should be written down, right? I mean,
no,
I think...
No. That is really the challenge. Should it be written down, and what do you do with it? And what do you that's really the challenge of this conversation.
So can you just give us a very high-level idea as to, you know, what a model for the measurement of goodwill actually looks like when you first do the acquisition and how you then go about doing the impairment testing? Because basically, I mean, from an analyst perspective, you know, what usually frustrates us in M&A is that management is not willing to disclose in a lot of detail, like, you know, sort of where synergies are coming from or, you know, what they're really hoping to achieve beyond, you know, just what the business is today. So basically my question is, I mean, do you actually sit down and sort of like, I don't know, build a DCF model or value the workforce by saying this is how much we'd have to pay a headhunter to poach these people?
Yes.
And so forth.
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
And then, okay, let me just quickly maybe finish my questions before we go into the discussion. And do I understand this correctly? I mean, if you think, for example, you can achieve $10 billion in... Let's just put it all on synergies just for simplicity for a second. So you think you can achieve $10 billion in synergies, and you give $5 billion of that to the other shareholders, so you have $5 billion of goodwill, and you get to the point where you think there's only $6 billion of goodwill achievable, of synergies achievable, there would be no goodwill write down because you're still, I mean, you only have $5 billion on your books anyway, or would you write down the whole thing? And then the final question is, how does the actual impairment testing, what are the steps between saying, you know, we think that we have identified whether the parameters have changed enough to warrant warrant this, the assumption that goodwill might have to be written down, versus actually rerunning the models. I mean, as an analyst, for me, there's no difference between checking whether the parameters in my DCF have changed and actually rerunning the DCF. So I'm just trying to understand, you know, the steps involved and why this sort of not annual testing would make life a lot easier.
The only thing I want to say is, in the accounting sense, goodwill is a mathematical calculation. It's a number where you subtract about what you identified for. So in accounting sense, it's nothing more than a mathematical calculation of allocation. And so when you're looking at goodwill impairment, you're actually looking at the fair value of what you acquired versus what you paid for it. If it's the fair value is under, or what it's on the books for, and the fair value is under, something's impaired. Usually it's some of the identifiable assets, but if you can't impair the identifiable assets and identify them, then you go against the good, the mathematical residual. But goodwill is a mathematical residual in the accounting sense.
But don't you need to justify it upon the acquisition so as to be able to go back and say, you know, there's no need to impair the goodwill right now? I mean, if you actually paid more, then you can justify by things like saying, this is what we think the workforce is worth, and this is what we think the synergies are.
People do that, but who would do that in their right mind?
Do you actually present numbers to your, I don't know, auditors or something saying, you know, this is why we think the goodwill is justified?
No, others,
or do you just
others,
say, well, that's the residual? And
others
the
can speak to it, but my experience is you look at an acquisition, you look at how much it's going to cost you to acquire that. There could be competition that's running up the price. There could be defensive type of items that you want to not allow your competition to take. It's all at an entity level. In my opinion, it's all at any level. And then when accounting comes in, it's just taking a big piece of the pie and allocating it.
But you don't actually have it. But
Mariela,
the
problem,
I think, is that
you cannot allocate the goodwill to that. That is a synergy or a specific asset. The problem is it is residual.
So,
and that makes it so difficult to measure it, because you cannot say, okay, it is this kind of asset or this thing. It is a kind of residual. And there you have to measure it as a higher aggregate, and that's the reason I think why we have developed is to based on a cash generating unit where this is integrated, and therefore you can do it only measured at a higher.
If you don't have a model at the beginning to actually say, you know, this is how we got to that goodwill number, how can you ever check the parameters going into that model?
As Bob said,
I am a bit surprised by the fact that you would. Impaired the goodwill at day one, because normally you will not accept to pay more than what you expect to have cash flows.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So,
exactly.
And at day one you are at fair value, but just after day one you are at the higher level between fair value and cost in use. The cash flow you can get from the business. So. Normally, at day one, just after day one, you are automatically higher in the cash flow you are expecting from the business than the price you paid. So you should not have impairment. If you have an impairment, that means that you have paid too much for what you have acquired. And I don't believe you do it. If you really think that you cannot get the cash flows, you don't buy the company.
But what does your model look like for?
As Bob said, it's the mathematical residual.
Mm-hmm.
As Martin said, and you then allocate it to the CGU. And then it's the same model that would use to impair the plant and machinery and so forth. But the surplus cash flows that you've generated from the plant and machinery and all the others supports this goodwill residual. And when all those cash flows don't work, then the goodwill starts to be written off.
The CGUs then have to build a DCF model
to capture
basically,
the goodwill.
And that's where
I think that
yes.
What's behind your question, if I may, is that look, if you can't allocate 1,000 on day one, how can you, 1 year after that, determine that non-allocatable value of 1,000 will be reduced to 800? That might be behind your question.
Exactly. So I'm just struggling to sort of understand the steps involved, because if you don't really have parameters to begin with, it's very hard to then later on say, oh, okay, the original parameters have changed, even though we've never identified them to begin with.
So where the problem is, if Tesco's was to buy Waitrose,
mm-hmm.
it'd be a goodwill allocation. If they then change all the Waitrose stores to Tesco's and the accountants have allocated a value to the Waitrose brand, we'd impair that brand value because it's no longer being used. But if they keep the Waitrose brand and the Tesco's brand together, then the combined cash flows of both Tesco's and Waitrose would support the goodwill number that's that residual.
Okay, let's stop here, because otherwise we, I think, until 12 o'clock.